Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
This will be the Media Project, an opportunity for you to have a half hour of commentary, analysis, and if we're lucky, even a little bit of insight into the news media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and Ira Fussfeld, publisher emeritus. That means he had great merit of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
I think some people might like to vote on that.
But merit, yes. Emeritus just means you retired with merit. It's a wonderful thing. Well, and Dr. Shartok is himself.
Interesting. I can be emeritus.
Professor emeritus.
I can be emeritus at SUNY in Albany, but not at New Paltz, where I spent many more years, because at the last year I was just full-time at Albany.
Ah.
And the rule is, if you don't retire from there, so that's why they've really...
Fascinating.
So what happens is, if you say at the end of the program, you know, Professor Emeritus, University of Albany, that you could do that.
You can do
that. New Paltz.
You could
do that.
That's
wrong, I'm telling you.
It's remarkable. Actually, you were speaking of Patricia Murphy's. What was Patricia Murphy's?
Oh, Patricia Murphy's. Did you go to Patricia Murphy's?
Was in Yonkers.
Yes.
And my mother would take us to Patricia Murphy's, and we'd say, Mom, why do we have to go there? Very upscale. Very genteel. I did not say Gentile. I said Gentile.
It might have been Gentile also.
Clearly not.
And we would go up
there
and I'd say to my mother, why do you do that? Why do we have to go there? She said, they're all doing it now.
They're all doing it now.
That was quite a place. Very opulent. They had swans. Yes.
Swans.
And they used to walk around giving you popovers.
That's what I was saying. Alan talked about the doilies there. And
the doilies,
we've had two letters from readers saying it was always about the popovers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that's all.
They're wrong. It was all about they're all doing it now.
Well, they are. Here's what they're all doing now. Some newspapers are eliminating print editions. The most recently, the Rutland Herald and the Barmont Pelier Times Argus, they've stopped publishing print editions on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays. So these are two sister newspapers that have been considered dailies. They'll publish online all the time, 7 days a week, but they will have newsprint available Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So how much do you think they'll save, Rex? You know these figures better than I.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, by not printing 3 days a week, could they save $1 million?
These papers have combined print circulation of about 18,000. So, Ira, what would an 18,000 print
I don't know what the current newsprint prices are, but it wouldn't surprise me between printing and delivery costs and the like that they could save $1 million. I thought this was interesting for a number of reasons, partly because they're all doing it now, but also because I don't believe that these newspapers are part of a big chain. I think they're that's a little bit unusual. You'd see the big corporate people are starting to cut publication days, but the privately owned papers generally are trying to hang on.
Right. In our state of New York, the Syracuse newspaper, now you can't get home delivery, and they put out a lesser print product that is basically just a compilation of the digital product 3 or 4 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a full print newspaper, I think, only 3 days a week.
And the Legislative Gazette, which I invented many years ago, is now completely online. No more print edition. And the WAMC program guide is all online, except for a few that we print for some people who, you know, may have not come into the technological age as 75-year-old Alan has.
However, you have an online or a digital play like City and State, which is a morning digital newsletter, afternoon digital newsletter in New York State, which now has created its own print product. Politico now has a monthly magazine as well. And so these are digital companies primarily that have created magazines to go along with them. So the
I wanted to ask you about this Politico thing. What do you know about that? A lot of the people at the top of Politico, some in their 50s, have decided to retire. I'm wondering, is this a sign of trouble in paradise or what?
I think that the sense of some of the founders is that they want to do something different.
Spend more time with their family.
As politicians always say. Yeah. I would be surprised if there isn't some settling out. Politico expanded rapidly, both nationally and into several states now. And, you know, companies rise and fall. There's an initial rise of revenue for something new. Politico is based upon a model of high-cost circulation without ad revenues.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so you can sustain that for a while if your content is really, really great. But it's a question of how many people are going to pay that high, a couple $1,000s a year for your
and
product.
And then, Rexy, they went into the various states.
Yes.
So you have a New York State Politico. Now, as a guy who has published the Legislative Gazette over the years, knows an awful lot about the way in which politics is received. If we do Trump on the radio, every single line lights up. If we do Andrew Cuomo or the latest from Preet Bharara about New York State corruption or where else, you got to beg people to get on the phone. So I have a feeling that the cognizance of state politics for the media has to follow that interest.
I just think it's broader than that. I believe that we're still in the nascent stages of the digital world, and we're still in a sorting out process, and there are so many digital media outlets. It's very hard to make money, particularly the kind of money that you need to have to reinvest in people and a product to keep going 24 hours a day. And to your point about there being digital companies are now starting to do print products, I've been reading that, yes, there are companies, not just the digital ones that you mentioned, but that others that are saying, gee, we ought to have a print component as opposed to we're a print product, we ought to have a digital component.
It may be a Hail Mary pass.
But I think the bottom line literally is we've not settled into anything yet. I just think that there's going to be more sorting out. I think there will be fewer digital entities. I do think that there will be less newspapers printing 7 days a week because they're going to consolidate to get cost savings there. But if you told me that where we are, if you told me 5 years ago we were going to be here today, I might not have believed it. But now that we're here today, I don't believe we'll be in the same place in 5 years. I think the change is going to keep coming.
Well, one other element to Alan's point about the comparison of WAMC audience is you're reaching a general audience here. I mean, it's specialized in that who listens to public radio is a self-selected audience of generally smarter, more affluent people.
And thanks to the Times Union, we're doing quite well because, you know, you guys, your deputy is here.
Absolutely.
Your reporters are here.
You know,
I don't think that would have happened in the old days.
Happen. Well, that could be. But my point is that something
like... There's a different editor than not a good guy like you.
Yeah. Very kind, very kind. But Politico rather goes to a targeted audience. It is not aimed at the general audience. It gets high dollars from its circulation by going to the insiders, to lobbyists.
How many of them are there?
Well, a few thousand.
The reason I say that is that at one point we got the brilliant idea of renting boxes, dedicated boxes, so that people could hear the legislative session. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
We did okay. There may have been 500. And I don't think that 500 has expanded. It's the same basic group of practitioners. I don't even know that they used it, but they thought they probably should have it.
I don't know. If you look at the lobbying registration, there are a lot more lobbyists, a lot more people who have to be connected to New York State government. As government has expanded its influence in New York State, there are more people who need that sort of intricate inside information.
Well, let me just argue with you for a moment, Rex. No.
So unlike you.
Let me just say that That is true that there are thousands who may register as lobbyists. Nevertheless, there is a core of the real pros, some of whom are coming up for quite careful inspection by both the Attorney General and Preparar, the U.S. Attorney, right now.
Yes.
So those are the people I think I'm talking about, as opposed to what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We'll see how bad. I think Ira's point is right, that it's all shaking out differently. We don't know what's actually going to happen. We don't know how long we all will have print products or what they'll be like. You know, we're now having good success with a couple of magazines that we publish. We publish a monthly magazine called 518 Life. By the way, what are we going to call that? They're giving us a new area code.
Is that right?
Yeah. What are we going to call it? Anyway.
Just that at 518 and...
yeah, blah, 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 whatever it's going to be. And Women at Work, which is not just a magazine, but also the fastest growing women's organization in the capital region. And so those are actually ancillary publications that are doing quite well for the Times Union.
Because they're dedicated to a smaller group?
Yeah, exactly. They're targeted. Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're going to the beach, I'm not sure which is the beach of choice in the capital region, but if you're going to the beach on a Sunday, you're reading the Times Union or its other products on print is a lot easier than trying to shield your iPad from the sun's glare and try to do any reading on it. And I think, I mean, that's a sort of an anecdotal and maybe trivial example, but I think that there are various examples like that that are showing that people do like to hold something in their hand and read it as opposed to reading off a computer screen.
But Ira, which people? Old people like you?
Well, I don't know about you, but even young people have trouble with glare reading off of an iPad. I don't care how old you are.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Let's assume you're right, which you are, about that. How long do you really think it's going to be before these companies figure out how to give you a device?
Well,
that
fair
won't
point.
Make
there may be a chip in your head by then, and somebody can dictate this stuff to you. I mean, well, it's just
there. Of course, are the readers, the book readers, you know,
who
the Kindle,
and that's one area where they're saying it's not as popular as they thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Anyway, if you have your thoughts about this, share them. Media@wamc.org is how you can reach us by email. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartak, and Rex Smith here with you on the Media Project this week. That would be the publisher, the professor, and the editor. Here we are. We've gone this far into the program. We haven't mentioned the name of the guy whose name rhymes with Ronald Stump. So Ronald Stump's alter ego sort of set the Beltway media into a tizzy by banning the Washington Post from his campaign events. Interesting tactic by a candidate. There now are actually a number of news organizations that have been banned by the Trump organization, not only the Washington Post, but also BuzzFeed, the Huffington Post, Politico, the Des Moines Register, and the Manchester Union Leader, at one point or another, have been banned by Donald Trump from covering him. Well, what difference does this make? Is this a good thing? Should we care?
Well, look, I think that the American people have very little respect for the news media in general. We've seen poll after poll that say that. So when a guy does what they would like to do, you know, they get covered, they don't like the way they're covered, they say, good, do that. That's okay. But on the other hand, there is this philosophical distaste those who would violate the First Amendment, the kind of thing that professors like to talk about in Politics 101, you know, you don't do that. And we'll have to see whether or not the public are as outraged by it as people like you and Ira, and to some degree me, about that.
Well, the practical matter is it has almost no impact on the publications that have been banned. You can still cover. It makes it a little bit more difficult if you're not granted press credentials, so you can't perhaps fly on the press plane, or you can't bypass all of the lines to get into the arenas, but you can cover his speeches. If he denies you in-person interviews, well, that happens routinely at any time with any politician. So I don't think that it's very much a symbolic gesture. It plays well to his base. And there are now signs as we speak that it's beginning to turn around. When he gave his first big speech this past week, when he was targeting Hillary, a number of the reporters from organizations that Rex mentioned showed up, initially were not let in, and then Hope Hicks, the campaign press chief, came down and did let them in. And so there is a suggestion that now, as part of this reboot, of Trump's campaign. And now that Corey Lewandowski, the former campaign manager, is not there, things will return to what is more or less normal in the world of politics and the press.
Well, it would be troubling if you consider him a serious candidate for the presidency, which we have to at this point. It's entirely possible that he'll be elected. The notion of a president banning news organizations from White House briefings is a significant issue. That would be really problematic. It's not just a campaign. If a president is going to say, I don't like what your coverage says, and remember, what this is, a lot of this arises from is coverage of not just his politics, but I believe this latest move came as a result of coverage of Trump University, his business interest, or coverage of the what Donald Trump was saying about the judge in the Trump University case. Yeah. So this is his business interest, which is prompting this effect on his presidential campaign. And if he's in the White House, would he similarly take action against the media who report in a way that he doesn't like?
Well, he claims he won't do that.
Well, we would have to assume he will, because he did it here. Look, Rex, this is nothing new. I remember before you got to the Times Union, I'm so old, but I remember before you got to the Times Union, I remember you had a very good City Hall reporter who antagonized the mayor of Albany. And he said, this guy can't come anymore. You know, I won't talk to that guy. I just won't talk to him. Well, you know, that could hurt a guy.
Well, we have that kind of thing. It, you know, it does happen. You probably have that too.
Assemblymen, congressmen. There was a mayor in Utica who was at war with the Observer Dispatch, I believe is the name of the paper up there. He actually got on 60 Minutes to do a profile because he was such a maverick. So it happens all the time.
There was a politician on Long Island who, shortly before my time as a reporter down there, who would use profanity in every sentence. He would say, that way Newsday can't quote me. He didn't want to give Newsday anything that they could use. He wanted to sort of box them out. And he said, you know, they'll never blank publish my blank language when I blank them. So it's...
Well, now they do that. They just, it's de rigueur. You just go beep, 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 beep.
Right, right, right. Yeah, well, it's...
The one thing that's different is I used to tell one of the local politicians who didn't want to talk to our newspaper, I said, you know, the only persons that you're really hurting here are the people who read our paper. We'll figure out a way to get the paper without you. We'll figure out a way to get the story without you. But if you're not cooperating with the newspaper, your name is not going to get into the newspaper, and thus your constituents are going to be deprived of the news. That's no longer the case because there are so many different places where you can go. And in Trump's case, he goes directly to the people by Twitter. So it's he could ban all the newspapers he wants, and he'd still be able to get his message out.
Well, it's an interesting point. I think I know who you're talking about.
There's more than one, sadly.
I'm talking about one of the main, you know, guys about this. And, you know, you take a guy, it sometimes goes to the question of a politician's judgment in general.
Yes.
So in other words, if the person, for example, was a Democrat and refused to endorse Bill Clinton and got thrown out because, you know, a lot of people still love their president during that election, that goes to the issue of general ability to think things through. Don't you see?
I agree. It's very short-sighted. You've got to have a thick skin if you're a politician. Nobody likes to read things that are either negative or occasionally inaccurate. But you have to plow your way through that because you need to be communicating with the people who are in your district or your state or your country.
Rather a responsibility of the job, I guess. So if you were just an ordinary rich person, not one running for president, sure. There are other ways to deal with the press. One example of that is a billionaire from Silicon Valley named Peter Thiel. Peter Thiel was ticked off with Gawker Media. And there's good reason for that. Years ago, they outed him as gay before he wanted that to be known. As a result, he has financed attacks on Gawker Media. Most recently, it has emerged that Peter Thiel was the money behind professional wrestler known as Hulk Hogan when he sued Gawker Media for publishing a sex tape and won $140 million, which has prompted Gawker Media to declare bankruptcy. So this is interesting. Here you have people who are very rich who decide they're going to take on the media in one way or another by bankrolling invasion of privacy case in this case, or perhaps by even creating their own media site. That's happened before as well.
Well, Rex, you know, you make a profound point here. This is a very serious issue because no media organization, take WAMC, where we're speaking right now, you don't want to have to come up with $50,000 or $100,000 to defend yourself. Just even that is an enormous amount of money. So let's just say you have some billionaire out there who tells terrible lies about you. You have the ability to answer or to sue or to shut up. And I have found over the years that shutting up is not a bad strategy.
Have you ever tried it? We'll be here all week, folks.
Let me ask you a question. Now, I'm happy to hear if I'm hearing correctly. We discussed this on a program that Rex wasn't here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, we forgot that.
And your reaction to this case was much different than what I'm hearing you say right now. So I'm either mishearing, misremembering, or you, in fact, have evolved. Because initially, you were not supportive of this Peter Thiel, but you were saying, in effect, Gawker is no good. Too bad if they're going to be taken on by somebody with deep pockets, etc. And our argument, Judy Patrick and I, was the deep pockets that these people have and the threat of these kinds of actions creates a chilling effect on media, broadcast and print, that might impact their way they cover stories.
To which I say, tough noogies.
Which is what you said the last time.
People have to be held accountable, you know, for what they do. However, when you ask me, was it A, B, or C, had I misremembered, the answer is probably the misremembered is part of it. But my job here is to keep it all moving. You know what I mean? But the famous Senator Alphonse D'Amato, when asked by a reporter that he had said one thing one day and another thing another day, he said, "That was then, and this is now." I remember that era.
Absolutely. But when you talk about rich people financing combat with the media, one of the things that is very notable these days is how major corporations basically are staffing their own newsrooms. They have hired reporters. They are putting out reports. They can use social media that conceals the origin of where it comes. And in effect, they can bypass the media by simply, through social media especially, seeming to be the media.
Right. And I don't find anything wrong with that. If there is something that appears in print or is broadcast, a corporation or an individual disagrees with, there are ways to get your point of view out. Even in the old days when there were less media, either as letters to the editor or press releases, etc. The difference today, or the difference with this Peter Thiel case, is that he has decided to invest a huge amount of money in financing court cases. And that's a different element
to
this.
I don't get it.
Well, there's nothing illegal about it. It's done. I just think that it has changed the rules of engagement. Again, traditionally, if you don't like what appears in print, there are ways to get your counter message out there.
Write a letter to the editor?
Or hire a public relations campaign to take out advocacy ads.
Except what he did worked, Ira. I would point that out to you.
It helped that his foe in this case was Gawker Media.
Well, exactly.
Which is rather despicable.
Yes,
I mean,
but nevertheless,
the content they produce.
All to my knowledge, all of the major news organizations rallied around Gawker because they saw this as a potential threat to them.
Well, of course,
down the road.
Like you're doing, like Rex does, just like Judy Patrick does, because you know I'm the only voice on this radio program that is willing to examine. You know
Let's see what happens when the Peter Thiel of Albany decides to sue WAMC and just keeps suing you and keeps suing you because the money needs nothing to
do. Well,
we haven't done anything.
You almost don't have to.
We haven't done.
Alan, they did do something despicable. Yes, they did. But you could be sued tomorrow based on a commentary you made this morning. Now, you probably have the case to win. It's a commentary. That doesn't mean that somebody couldn't drag you in court and cost you a lot of money.
That's true. And we do have, as they say upstate New York, insurance.
Insurance.
Oh, sure, but you want to pay the deductible?
No, and not only that, but insurance companies, as you probably know, don't want to pay out huge amounts of money. So even if they know you're right, sometimes they'll settle.
I don't know what it is now, but we used to have a $50,000 deductible, and I didn't want to spend $50,000. So even though we were insured, protected against, you know, the multi-million dollar settlement, we still had to write a check for $50,000 if we wanted to defend ourselves.
Well, I'm not at all sympathetic to you, Ira.
Let's sue him. Rex, can we find
him? Well, I'll find a lawyer.
I'm going to go on Central Avenue and see if we can collect some money. $27 a person, and we're going to go sue WIMC.
All right. That's all we've got time for today. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, the publisher, the professor, and the editor. Thanks for joining us on The Media Project.
Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.